RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 78 with guest Wes Miller. Recorded Thursday, September 25th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. Richard, how's it going today?
Well, it's raining in Vancouver. I bet you it's raining in Portland.
Nope.
Oh, come on.
It's cloudy. It's kind of gray today, but no, it's not raining.
All right. Well, fall is fall. And, yeah. Of course, fall means conference season, and probably when this show's running, I'll be in Europe or something. My fall's insane this year.
Yeah, it's a lot more insane than mine, that's for sure. I've got a lot lot going on locally, but you seem to, as usual, have a lot going on all over the world.
But you and I are going to be together in Barcelona, Tech Ed Europe.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. You know, I know we say that every week, but every time you mention it, I get a little bit more excited. So.
Well, and it changed things around this year. Our stage, the community stage, we're going to do speaker idle and our panel discussions and so forth,
right,
is dead center of the floor this year instead of off to the side. So
yeah, it's a pretty cool layout they got down there in the hall.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm really looking forward to it.
And I've been looking at the sessions that are listed and a lot of the content for this Tech Ed EMEA, and it's going to be a really good show.
And if you're a listener to Run As, you probably want to give a listen to .NET Rocks, and .NET Rocks is running the sweepstakes right now for a free ticket, airfare, hotel, and admission to Tech Ed Europe. You can use it this year or next year. That's at .NETRocks.com.
So when does that end? When does that contest
come
to an end?
That's like the week before Tech Ed actually goes, they're going to end the contest to pick the winner. And
wow,
that's one of the reasons they offered the second week, so the second year. So if you can't actually tell your boss the week before, and hey, I want a trip to Tech Ed, see ya.
Right.
You can go the following year, which isn't in Barcelona. I think it's in Germany. I think it's in Berlin, but we don't know for sure.
That would be pretty darn awesome. So if you're either unemployed or if you're a consultant that has nothing to do, then you can certainly take advantage of it this year. Otherwise, we'll be more than happy to see you next year.
Absolutely. And any questions, comments, shows you'd like to see, send us an email, info@runasradio.com.
That's your input that makes this show what it is.
All right, let's jump to our guests. The one, the only, Wes Miller. What can you say about Wes Miller? Ex-Microsoft, ex-Winternals, runs with tech fellows like Mark Rusinovich, and now with CoreTrace?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Tell us a little about CoreTrace, Wes, and welcome. Glad you're back.
Oh, it's great to be here. We'll have to try and not let 72 shows run between my next time I get back to you guys again.
Show number 6 was the last time that we talked to you.
Yeah, back when we were just figuring this stuff out.
Been a little bit. Well, so yeah, I basically during that time frame you guys were doing that, I took a year and was working a little startup here in Austin, and along came another startup that is much more security focused and much more really right up my alley, and basically beginning with a project they'd started in 2001. One of the founders had started creating a platform for application whitelisting, something that, as you may recall from my time at Winternals, is something I pretty fundamentally believe in.
Sure.
So, chatted with them, found out we had a lot in common, and so I've been serving as their product manager since last December, so going on a year now, and it's been
great.
A blast. We just got back from a conference. We were at Demo Fall 2 weeks ago, one of the 72 companies that had the coming out party, and it was phenomenal. So it was a great experience, and pretty jazzed about where our products go.
And it's a great area of thinking. I mean, I don't necessarily want to go deep into whitelisting right now, but if you haven't thought about this, it's the same basic concept of you had a fingerprint for your app, and that's a good way to stop non-authorized apps from running on your machines.
Yeah, that'd be a great show in and of itself. We'll have to have you back to talk about that sometime.
I'm with you. That's a good idea. I'll stick that in the hopper here, and let's come back in a few weeks and really do dig into whitelisting some more.
Yeah, but today...
Yeah, what is today?
I was thinking maybe we could talk about information rights management.
Oh, my goodness. All right, security show. Greg, it's your game.
Sorry. Okay, so if you bring up rights management, the first thing that we have to do is we have to talk about what we're not going to talk about, because rights management, just those two words, have been applied to a lot of different products, technologies, add-ins, downloads, or whatever at Microsoft. So maybe we should define the big picture, what different rights management stories there are, and then drill down on maybe the Windows Right Management or Active Directory Rights Management or the topic that we want to talk about today.
Sure, yeah, it's like the Fight Club, the first rule of rights management, you don't talk about digital rights management.
Or never say the words digital rights management, right?
So yeah, fundamentally, I mean, the topic that's been of interest to me for a while and really of late, I'm actually, I have an article that'll run a couple of months here in TechNet that is specifically talking about Windows Rights Management Services, so RMS as it's usually abbreviated, and Office Information Rights Management, or IRM, as it's usually abbreviated. And the two,
gotcha,
though they're separate technologies integrated into separate pieces of Microsoft's infrastructure, are completely interrelated.
Gotcha. So what does that mean?
So what it means is, if you actually look at the two pieces of technology, and it's funny because it usually doesn't, people tend to dissociate IRM and RMS as not being DRM, but at the fundamental level, that's what they are, because DRM is all about having content be owned and protected and having it not go where it's not supposed to go.
Right, controlling access and disclosure, if you will, right?
Exactly. And so what IRM does is it works to protect the content from within Office, and Windows then serves as the proxy agent to say, all right, you've protected the content, now who should I actually let have access to it? And between your domain infrastructure and your local machine, then we'll actually proxy that and say, all right, this user has permission to see this content. Let's go ahead and allow them to view it or print it.
So let's talk for a minute about the problems that we're trying to solve. We have a tendency as IT guys to sort of dive into technology and then try to find a problem to solve once we've discovered some cool technology. Let's take the other route. Talk about business problems and before we really dive into the technology side.
Absolutely. Well, and it's funny because I wound up on several calls when we go out and we'll talk to customers. We have a really great solution for stopping the bad stuff coming in, and they'll often turn to us and say, "That's great. So that solves most of my problem, but I have this other problem. How do you keep the good stuff from getting out?"
Right.
And that's the fundamental problem. There's sort of two approaches to this, and one of them, which has been the industry approach for years, is make my USB ports go away.
That's what epoxy is for. Right? Mix it together.
It's funny you mention that. I remember at Microsoft, we actually had a government, I won't name the country and I won't name the division of the government, but they came in and they actually said that this was their technique to protect rights.
Oh, they're not the only ones. I've worked with financial institutions in the real world who would come, the company that I worked at, in the past, doing security audits, and they would send their auditors in and they literally had their USB ports epoxied. I mean, it was a clear epoxy and it was filled up.
And while a great one-off solution, it doesn't scale real well and doesn't really solve the actual problem, because as soon as a user throws in a CDRW and you haven't done device control to that level, which was hard,
right,
until Vista, then you've lost control of the content again. So the problem is you're stopping the guy after he's left the gate and saying, hey, you probably shouldn't be taking that right now. And that's really what rights management in the IRM world is all about, is protecting the content within your infrastructure. So things that used to happen at Microsoft where you see a great email in the morning from Steve or Bill when I was there in 97-04, and the great email would, you'd see it and you're like, oh, this is awesome news, and it would say Microsoft Confidential right at the top and at the bottom in really big red fonts.
Right.
And somebody would
on 1,000 blogs by 3 p.m. Right?
Exactly. It was on the Seattle Times in an hour.
Yeah, right.
So,
and probably cross-posted to my blog. Who knows? I mean, that's
exactly. Which is fine as long as you get the traffic. But
as long as I wasn't first, that's it. Yeah.
Exactly.
This technology that Microsoft has put together, we should dive into what it does, but it's really transformed and changed over time. I can remember, the first iterations of this in Office, and dealing with attachments to email, for example, and how you could protect stuff inside a Microsoft realm, but once you took stuff outside the Microsoft software, maybe it wasn't quite so protected. Has that changed, or am I even accurate in that regard?
You're close, and there's a couple of things that come into play here, and you recall there's been a big contention, hopping into DRM for a second, there was a big contention in back when they were building Vista about Microsoft building in the HDCP, the high-def copy protection that
right.
went all the way up into the analog layer, so you had to have a special monitor, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Sure.
Well, that whole idea, it eventually fails even there because of the problem referred to often as the analog hole. And you know, that fundamentally means anytime something gets rendered to a screen or piped out to an analog output, you've lost control of it because it's no longer digital.
Right.
So if you think about this virtual world we're living in, where people have VPCs and VMware installs, where they've got Windows running under there, it's easy enough to capture a screenshot of whatever's running on that screen. So
sure.
The problem is you have to understand whenever you approach rights management like this that there are some cutoff points where you say it's good enough. And I have to think, for me at least, IRM going that much farther is a lot better than me saying, all right, I've super glued all 60 of my desktops. We're secure now.
Right. that's a good point.
So I think about protecting at the file level, but actually stopping an email from opening?
So what it's actually doing is it's encrypting the content itself. It's really, you know, it's all about the content. And instead of trying to use permissions to control access to it, like you would traditionally, you know, Office for years has had generally breakable password protection for documents. And the document wasn't literally encrypted with that. It was a password. And now you can think of IRM as an encryption layer on the document itself. So if you don't have the key, literally, to unlock this document, the document is useless to you. In fact, if you open up an IRM-protected Office document, you can look at it like a notepad. You can look at it, and you can actually see that the document is formatted differently because it's encrypted. And so the guy who gets to open it first is IRM, not literally in Word.
Now, Windows Right Management, or you know, Active Directory Rights Management, as they call it now, are we able to do this at the file system level? Are we talking just Office documents? Can we apply it to other types of documents? Any file on a file system? Where are we at today?
So where we're at today is there's actually Microsoft did a couple of really neat things. They've actually begun licensing the technology. So I've seen a couple of vendors, and without naming names, there's some people who've extended this story above and beyond, you know, to other platforms, other document types, other scenarios that are amazing. And the neat thing is most of those interoperate with ADRMS, although some of them actually take it a step farther and do some things on their own with their own management. But what you get in the box today with IRM in Office and RMS in Windows is you get the ability to protect what honestly is going to be, again, the majority of your infrastructure content. You can go in, you can protect all of your Office documents. My article actually has a link to a table of literally all the file types that you can protect this way now. But all of the Office document types and Outlook email, so you can protect emails themselves. You can't protect an email as an attachment within another email. It's kind of a cryptic thing, but you can protect a ton of Office content this way. And the neat thing is it's not system-specific. That protection roams wherever the document roams. Since the document is encrypted itself, it leaves your office. It doesn't matter.
Sure. I can see examples where maybe I would want for anybody within my organization to be able to see it or forward it, or maybe not forward it. Can we control it at that level? I mean, so I'm going to send an email, but I don't want anybody to be able to forward it to anywhere except for maybe a very small group of people that I specifically allow to do that.
So there's a couple of neat things you can do. You can definitely do within email, you can say, basically, you've got to do not forward. So you, in order to open the content, we'll take a step back for a second. In order to actually open the content, the person opening it has to authenticate. And that usually means providing either Active Directory credentials or, if you've extended it a little bit farther, a Windows Live passport that allows them to go through and do that same pass-through authentication.
I'm sorry, did you say passport?
Yes, I did.
Windows Live ID?
I said Windows Live. Yeah, excuse me. Sorry. You'll recall I left in 04. The branding has changed a little bit. So a Windows Live ID.
There you go.
So we're talking about federation, right?
Yeah, you're definitely talking about federation. And there's even some really cool cross-domain scenarios that are in ADRMS now. So if you've got Dell and Microsoft exchanging documents, for example, those can actually stay encrypted and have RMS working across them.
So it can go across forests as well as across domains. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And you can assign it on a user basis, on an OU basis, group basis, et cetera. It's pretty flexible. The key thing is there's not much of a learning curve for a viewer. You know, you can sort of think of this as most publishing metaphors. For the viewer, it's you got to teach them how to put in credentials. The key and the devil of the details is in the sender, where they've got to sit there and say, all right, now how broad do I want this to go?
Right.
And do I want an expiration on it, either a terminal expiration or the content can be free after this period of time? So that's another neat thing about RMS is it can actually if you've got a press release you don't want to go public, you can have an expiration date that it literally kills the document regardless of who gets it. It dies on this day. Or you can say, you know, after that day, I really don't care. Anybody could view it.
You know, I think about protecting sensitive information or intellectual property, and office documents and emails are great, but and if you have to name names, I think that's okay. But I mean, I think about things like source code or files containing data. You know, it could just be some kind of a text flat file or something that contains sensitive information from, sure. You know, I mean, it could be banking information. It could be anything. I always go back to that example because that's my experience, but you know, you could apply it to a wide variety of compliance oriented information. And controlling and monitoring and protecting access to that in a guaranteed way is a really difficult thing to do. So I'm trying to figure out where are we today, but also where can we go in the future and how can we do that? How can we better protect sensitive information with a really high level of confidence from a technology standpoint to complement our process requirements that we have from a security approach? But what technology-wise, can we leverage this to do some of that?
Sure. Yeah, it's definitely something that's possible. I haven't looked into the specifics about pluggability, but I know that the functionality exists that if an ISV wanted to come along, let's say like AutoCAD, and they wanted to, or Autodesk, if they wanted to actually make AutoCAD this work within an IRM infrastructure, they can do that. It just takes work on their part, and that's, you know, I guess sort of the traditional Microsoft story. If we build the infrastructure, and then it's up to the ISVs to realize the value of adding it in. And you know, sure. IRM rights management as a whole is one of those things that you sort of have to explain. You know, if tech guys like us are sitting here talking about it, and sometimes we all even scratch our heads when you actually go out to a company that, you know, let's take Intuit as an example, and you're describing to them, well, you know, you really want to encrypt your content using this kind of thing. Because data at rest is only at rest for so long, and when it starts flying over the wire, you're not really protecting it. So there's abilities to plug into it. I've not seen many other ISVs do that piece of it, which is really unfortunate. But one company, I get jazzed every time I talk to the guys from there. I met them for the first time at RSA this year at Liquid Machines. And they've taken Microsoft's IRM to a whole other level, and they, you know, they protect content while it's moving around. So if you copy and paste from a protected document, if you're allowed to, the new document inherits the protections.
Interesting.
So some really rich scenarios, and that's sort of, I think, the direction you'll see over the next couple of years is compliance collides violently with what I like to refer to as true security. And I've had a post recently or an article about how compliance and security aren't necessarily the same thing. And I think this is, we'll see this more and more over the next couple of years.
If you go down that path, it's just sort of a recognition of compliance. We've done some shows specifically on compliance. Is really, can you pass the audit?
Absolutely.
And that's a totally different can of worms, per se.
That's one way of looking at it. Compliance and security are two different things, right? You know, compliance is, you know, do you meet these thresholds? I think that's, is that what you're saying, Richard? I think.
Yeah.
As opposed to security, which is more of a way of doing things and is measured in similar ways, but at the same time, maybe has, you know, loftier goals and certainly broader and more complete goals than a specific compliance review.
Right. As I like to say, you know, basically, compliance doesn't generally beget security, but security does beget compliance.
Right.
Right, right.
So, and it clarifies motivation too. I mean, pretty much folks understand why we need to secure things. The fact that that happens to support compliance, which more people question the value of.
Yeah, quite often we see compliance requirements that are simply thrust upon organizations driving security initiatives, though. So it does go both ways, but they are not one and the same.
Absolutely. So I guess if you know, to sort of answer your question, if you take a step back and you look at what IRM does, you know, you think about the life of a knowledge worker during a typical day. Probably 60-80% of their documents in a typical office, if not more, are going to be office documents. So what Microsoft has gotten is a good initial stab, and then you can look at either other vendors or I honestly haven't seen another solution like IRM that takes it any farther that protects other document types, unfortunately. But you know, you can look at local disk encryption to protect the content while it's at least at rest, but then you sort of miss it if it flies off the system.
Well, and the trick here, and I don't know we've really dove into this, the implementation side of this thing is if I'm able to, because it's all Active Directory driven, I've got people assigned to groups and so forth, so they've been, that's where their permission source comes from, is their relationship in AD.
Absolutely. absolutely.
So we have permissions and then we have rights. Permissions mean being file system permissions versus rights, which is I'm thinking I can have permission to get to where the file is, but not have the rights that are required in order to actually open and view it.
Exactly, and that's actually an important delineation that Microsoft put in, you know, literally in the product by referring to it as Microsoft's rights management product. And you know, it's the exact idea that I've got. Everyone in my company may have access to this share, but I may have an executive's directory that only executives can get into. Or, you know, it, just as importantly, in a Starbucks type review, you may have one that honestly only the CFO and her team or his team can get into to actually do their work. So, you know, rights takes you a one step farther than permissions. The problem is if you had just permissions, let's take that share metaphor. And I had permissions on that, on just an ACL on that chair, just an ACL.
Right.
But if I had an ACL on the chair, or something comes loose because somebody sets a poor ACL, then that file is sitting there on its own, and someone can either compromise it intentionally or accidentally. You know,
yeah, it
goes both
common.
Ways. And what RMS does, what rights management does, as a whole concept is say, you know, listen, I don't care where this content is; it's more than permissions. I want only these people, these principals, this OU, or my people in my domain to ever actually see this content. It's just, it's that private, and I want to keep it private.
So technically, talk about how this works. I think there's a server role. Is there a client that needs to be run?
Yeah.
And I guess in the real deep technical part of it, does this require certificate services? Is there some kind of a PKI infrastructure that's going on in the background? How does it all work?
Sure. So Microsoft, I have to... You know, kudos to the team. I recently needed to install this in order to get the whole, I'm familiar enough with the backstory about it, but I wanted to get it all installed so I could do my article about it. And honestly, I installed this on my Windows Server 2008 box, and it was one of the most pleasant experiences I think I've ever had. it just went through. You told it, I want to install ADRMS, and it installed all of the subcomponents it needed to. And in the back end, you honestly probably don't want to know the dependency stack that it installed, but it's things like IIS. It's things like MSMQ is actually a critical part of this. So it actually installs the message queuing service as well. But the wizard is phenomenal about doing all the configuration for you. So I'd actually encourage anybody out there who's thought about playing with it to do it, because it's a ridiculously simple install to do, and you can be up and running in a matter of minutes. And then there is a client piece as well. The client piece, obviously we're talking about the server side, it hooks into Active Directory as well, so you have to have a domain controller up and running for that to work.
Sure.
Which I happen to have one lying around. On the client side, there is a standalone client that goes back, if I recall correctly, it might even go back all the way to Windows 98, but they really tout support beginning with Windows 2000 all the way through Windows XP, and actually Server 2003, excuse me, and beginning with Vista, the client is actually integrated into the product. So it's a native part of Windows Vista and Windows Server 2008. So you don't even have to do a client install. You just have to say, here's your RMS content, and it begins doing the association.
Gotcha.
And you could sort of say that there's a two-piece process to it, because you've got the RMS client then on the Windows machine, but you obviously need a copy of Office that has the actual IRM piece in it. So since Office and Windows are two separate products, you've obviously got to have Office there to install it too. And this is beginning with, if I recall correctly, Office 2003 was the first version that offered it, and it came forward into Office 2007. So it's in both of those versions. If you have one of those, it just works.
So what's the mechanism to actually identify a user? Is it using a Windows digital certificates, or how is that happening?
It's traditional, like if you're used to user manager style picker, it's not too far from that. And again, there's sort of a, let's separate the experiences. You've got a producer of content and a consumer of content. So let's take a step back and look at the guy or gal who's actually producing the content that they want to share, but not share too liberally. So what they do is they actually go in and they create the content they want, lay it out, set it up, get it ready to send off, and they can just select the option to protect the content in Office itself. So the option is there, and it will tell them if they don't have RMS installed on an older version of Windows to install it, and actually give them a URL to direct it to. Great experience there, too. And once they've done that, there's actually a dialogue which pops up which allows them to apply the appropriate protections that they want. Things like, the expiration date, can people print this, there's the analog hole again, what kind of things can they do with it? And in there, they can actually select the users, groups, or OUs that they want to apply to the content itself as far as protections.
Is there a mechanism to create policies for like minimum security requirements?
There's the ability for the within the RMS piece itself, you can actually create initial profiles, and those get shared out so that you can have a profile that applies to your RMS users,
right.
And so you can have a company, you know, all company, you can have this subsidiary only, that kind of a thing. So you can do some pretty neat subdivisions within RMS itself, and users get to take advantage of that.
I'm just thinking from the context of. It's one thing to have the rights to actually get in and access the document as well, but I'm also thinking about configuring the rights of what options document creators are allowed to set. It's like, I'm sorry, under no circumstances can these things be copied. You have the choice to restrict, you can adjust who can read it and who can't.
Yeah, so Microsoft stuff is pretty much a Boolean, unfortunately. It's been sort of a print or not. So
right.
You can view it or you can not view it, and you can set the option to print or not. Liquid Machines has been neat in that they took it one step further and do allow you the more granular copy, but keep protecting, copy, allow,
right.
Allow it to break, that kind of a thing. But what they do have is within Microsoft, there's a couple of different classifications of author, like creator owner kind of a thing. And then you have editors, and then you have consumers. And so the editor people can actually sit there and make some modifications to it, but they still can't print the document.
Right. So you do have.
I'm curious
what
the transaction looks like in the background. So you have to authenticate the person who's doing the read or the view or the print, and then
right.
Something's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, if we talk about the consumer experience, once I've produced that content and I've emailed it out, I could have emailed it to everybody, and only those people I want to will now be able to actually consume it. The consumer side, what you get is you get a Windows Live experience where you basically are challenged for some credentials, and you're asked to provide your authentication. You can basically say either I've got a Windows Live ID or I'm going to use my corporate ID, generally corporate being your preference because you're going to keep it all internal to your organization, and that's generally how it'll be set up.
And if it's corporate, is it a pass-through thing at all, sort of transparent to me, or do I have to interact?
As a user, you have to interact. You have to actually type in credentials. It's one of those classic, more like a basic authentication instead of an in-the-background Kerberos authentication.
Okay.
But obviously still using Kerberos to do it, but you're instead of doing a prompt, instead of doing it automatically, you do have to have a prompt, and you'll interact with it, type in your regular domain credentials and password, and click OK, and then the content literally just renders. And so I'll sort of gloss over the transaction just because I'm not intimately familiar with all the pieces
sure.
over the wire that are going on. But basically that those credentials, even if you're you can have an internet facing RMS as well, so users can be roaming and actually connect up if you're remote. But generally this is going to be connecting up to the RMS server it was told to authenticate to, and that RMS server is going to do its own polling through Active Directory, find out, is this user allowed, and actually go through RMS and say, okay, they are, and then proxy that back. And generally, I'm relatively certain that's where MSMQ gets involved in the transaction, is a lot of that communication back and forth to the client.
You just mentioned an internet-facing server. So I guess one question was, so if I'm not on the corporate LAN and I can't talk to I'm not talking directly to the domain controller and whatnot, my already provisioned client knows to ask for a server by name that's accessible on the internet? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, you're basically going to tell it this is the machine, the FQDN to connect to, and it's going to go through that fully qualified domain name to say, here's my preferred RMS guy, and okay, he knows me, and we're good to go here. So again, they've built a really good experience, and it's relatively fault tolerant that, I had some initial hangs setting it up, hang-ups getting it set up. But once I actually got up and running, telling it which server to go to, then it's actually very robust.
Well, and I love the fact that this is, as soon as I hear Active Directory, I think, okay, better network better be right. It's all internal.
Yeah.
Branch offices need not apply. And then you start
right.
thinking about what happens if this doc actually gets out in the wild, what authentication seems to even work. But it looks like they've worked that stuff out.
No, I think they did a really good job. And, one of the ironic things is, years ago when trains were first coming into vogue in the United States, I don't know if you know the story about they used to have it where the brake system would stay open if it didn't have pressure holding it shut.
Right.
the other way around. And now it obviously clamps shut unless it's got a pressure applied to it. So it stops a train that's a runaway instead of the other way. And the beauty of the RMS stuff is that if it doesn't work and you're too far away, there is a chance that the content is going to stay protected like it should. But that said, you know, I actually had, a great experience setting it up, and it works really well, and used it at Microsoft for several years before I left, and it's relatively robust.
Well, and you bring up a valid point, which is this is one of those classic Microsoft dog food moments. They have this problem. This is a tool they develop for themselves that now they've turned it into a product, and they've really beat the snot out of it.
Absolutely. Now, if it were not working, it wouldn't have worked within Microsoft. But this is used extensively within Microsoft to control content from getting out, because there's just some information that's the kind of stuff you need to protect that way.
Absolutely. So
very, very cool.
I mean, if you're an all Windows 2008 Vista shop, you've got this.
Plug and play.
And then if you're lesser versions, it's just a download.
Previous version, yes.
Right. You know, in the spirit of a lot of the stuff that was done for Windows Server 2003 after the team shipped in late 2002, there's a free download. So if you're still running Server 2003, it's still gratis, but you do have to install it after you download it from the internet. And the 2008 version, again, is a little bit more full featured, and you've just done a better job of integrating it overall, so it's a easier setup, et cetera.
Yeah, it took me a second to find it on the Microsoft site. Windows Rights Management Services. It's at SP2. Yes, click and download. 64-bit and 32-bit clients. That's good. So it looks like a mature set of software.
It's been really, really neat learning about the internals of it, because it's a very functional piece of software. You know, occasionally companies will come out with software that, I don't understand why I'd need that. But once you really start explaining the whole rights management problem to people and why you're not protecting it if you've got shares, you're not protecting it if you've got permissions, as we were talking about earlier, right?
Right.
The key thing is it's about protecting the content itself.
Yeah, but I like the fact that, it's the file is encrypted. If you use the software, it'll be easy to decrypt, but you don't have to. It's going to be tricky to circumvent, and you can pound your way through the decryption by hand if you really, really want to, but good luck.
Right.
Yeah, it does help to solve one of the classic problems of, Joe calls me because Joe doesn't have, ACL permission access to a file and says, hey, can you grab that file for me and email it to me? If there's a reason that Joe shouldn't have access to it, whatever that reason is, then this certainly helps prevent that.
Sure. Yeah, and it's actually kind of interesting too, because while I was at RSA, one of the things that attracted me to a couple of companies there and talking to them and realizing we're on the same page was thinking about security from a proactive versus a reactive perspective. And I saw a lot of companies out there who will attempt to help you find shares that aren't secure, or attempt to do stateful email inspections. So they'll look at every single email that goes over the wire, and some will try to look at IM traffic, but that doesn't scale. It doesn't protect you. And so you have to come up with something proactive, and that's really what's neat about RMS, is it's a proactive way to protect your content.
There's another show we could have, is proactive versus reactive security, and maybe we'll do that someday, but that would definitely be a different conversation.
Gentlemen, I think we're about out of time.
All right.
Another half hour flies by. I didn't know that I wanted to know this much about rights management, actually.
It's very interesting. I'd be curious, Richard, too, if any of our listeners are using or have used Windows Rights Management Services, drop us a line, info@renosradio.com. We'd like to hear your experiences and what you've used it for.
It's great. Wes, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
And
Take care, Wes.
We'll bring you back next year. Well, actually, I think we should get into whitelisting. So, call back to the beginning of the show. I'll ping you in a couple of weeks and we'll put in the show together.
Wonderful.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.